What will you choose to highlight and to speak about?
Well, when I will give this speech, I'll talk a little bit, not a lot, because honestly, they only gave me 5 to 8 minutes, but that's a great thing as well. It keeps me on task. But what I will try to do is very briefly touch upon the history, which most people there will know about the history, but I will try to make Juneteenth relevant to today. Many times we talk about, you know, why are these holidays, why are they relevant to the plight of today? When I teach my American Civil Rights class, one of the first questions I always ask them, you know, we're going to look at the history of the American Civil Rights Movement, which was an interracial American movement. We talk about how Charleston Heston, Marlon Brando, Peter Paul and Mary, all these people were present at the March on Washington and spoke at the March on Washington, you know, where it was Bob Dylan who performed at the March on Washington as well. But, you know, that iconic speech of Martin Luther King Jr., that's what takes the day. But we talk about this interracial movement, that America is trying to right its wrongs from the failures of the first Reconstruction. But at the end of this class, I always ask them, is the civil rights movement over? Meaning, is it over? And most of them will debate that or take it and analyze it. And I try to plant this seed. And most of them will come back and say, Dr. White, I don't think it's over. And most of them will say that it's not over because African Americans are not the only people who have civil rights. Civil rights, what is a civil right? A civil rights is something that is bestowed upon you as an American citizen.
Right, we all have civil rights.
We all have civil rights. So therefore, if the civil rights movement, how can the civil rights movement be over as long as there are demographic groups of people out there who are being discriminated against or certain rights are not being, and that leads us to some natural connections that are being a hot, you know, the topic of a lot of issues today that has been very divisive. But so I plant that seed. So I try to make these speeches relevant to today and talking about them, getting them to understand the importance of what these things are and how they are still relevant to today. So I'll do something with the speech talking about the relevance of today and a celebration of, but not also celebrating, but giving remembrance to those who, you know, paid the ultimate price, like Medgar Evers, like Martin Luther King Jr. These gentlemen paid the ultimate price for these celebrations to be, you know, be had today. So I'll do something like that.
Right. How have you personally, I'm asking a personal question, mm-hmm. but how have you personally celebrated or recognized these events in the past?
That's when people ask me that, I always say that there is an iconic essay by Frederick Douglass. And Frederick Douglass was a great black abolitionist. And Douglass was asked to, by a group of well-intended people, asked to come and give the keynote speech at a 4th of July event. And at that time, blacks were still in bondage. Frederick Douglass was, at that point, had bought his freedom and had dedicated his life to the abolitionist movement. But Douglass got behind that podium, and he lambasted his audience when he talked about what the 4th of July meant to him. The 4th of July meant to him oppression. The 4th of July did not mean the same thing to him that it meant to white Americans at that point. And the 4th of July would never mean to him until America lived up to its true principles of what it had stated, that what we had traditionally always done is we celebrate the 4th of July. We're not anti-American. It's a national holiday, and we still barbecue. But we also place special emphasis on June 19th. And in my family, we always had the tradition that we would read Douglass's speech about what the 4th of July meant to him. Many African Americans actually see Juneteenth or June 19th as a day of celebration of independence, because the true reality of it is that many African Americans don't see July 4th in the same aspect as other people do. And I hope the audience understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying that African Americans are anti-American. African Americans understand the purpose of that. But if you take yourself and you are coming from this tradition of, you know, this ancestry of your ancestral being in bondage and what the 4th of July meant, well, when you have a great-great-great-grandmother who her grandmother was a slave and things, that is passed down, and it means something a little bit different to you. So African Americans have always taken June 19th and used it as kind of this unofficial Independence Day. It serves the same purpose as kind of the 4th of July, in addition to the 4th of July, I would say.
Well, in kind of trying to prepare for this interview, I saw that you recently published a book.
I did.
And I feel like we should maybe take the opportunity to kind of talk about that a little bit. I don't believe you've been in to talk about it, have you?
I have not.
No.
I have not.
And though I didn't have time to actually research the book, but I just feel like we should maybe talk about it a little bit since
well,
you're here.
It is The Rise to Respectability, Race, Religion, and the Church of God in Christ. And then what I do is I go through that book and I look at this particular denomination, the Church of God in Christ, which arguably is the fourth largest religious denomination in the United States. Regardless of race. The Church of God in Christ would actually start right here in the great state of Arkansas and with a gentleman who was raised in Plumerville, Arkansas, which is right outside Morrilton. And now
I've seen the sign.
You've seen the sign, yes. And the Church of God in Christ is very interesting, and for one reason, because I was raised in the church myself. And it sparked a lot of questions that once I arrived in grad school, a lot of the readings that I was coming into contact with explained a lot of the things that I had always known, but maybe not knew, you know, why things were that way. So that research project started about 10 years ago when I was a graduate student, and it's kind of stayed with me, and it bloomed and it blossomed. And so by the very essence of trying to answer that question, it resulted into this publication. And really what I do is I look at, you know, what this church has meant, this international church now, which is distinctly Southern, that started with you know, slaves. It's present in 33 countries around the world now, and it's in every state in the Union, in the continental and in both, in the two states outside, and the territories. And how does this international, you know, church, black-dominated, grows from this little bitty part of the world called Plumerville, Arkansas. And there's several different questions that I ask that, you know, moves the research forward. But one of the biggest one is, as a kid when I was growing up, I heard a black lady, a friend of mine, his mother said, you know, oh, those sanctified folks, they just don't know any better. And that stayed with me. I was about 12 years old. And these people were good people. They were decent people. And these were black people. And I didn't understand what she meant because I knew I was one of those sanctified people. And everybody who had any type of major contribution to my life up until that point had been one of those sanctified folks. And that prompted a lot of questions. So I look at how this church has always been divisive within the African-American community and try to dispel some myths and unwind all these different things about the church. So, and that's where the research kind of derived from and what I do in the book. I always tell people it's really hard to kind of explain the work. I really like people reading the book and then come and we can talk. But people will ask me all the time, explain the book. And it's really kind of hard for me to give you a synopsis on something I've kind of been working on for 11 years because there's a lot of different things.
Or maybe even since you were 12.
Yeah, I mean. Exactly. Yeah, because I started toting around these questions very early on. And as I said, it wasn't until I was in graduate school that some of these things started to become a lot more clearer. And the church has heavy Arkansas roots, which is one of the main reasons I wanted it to be on the University of Arkansas Press, is because it began here, it started here, and even with the Assemblies of God, that history is kind of debated a little bit. But most people would say that the Assembly of God and the Church of God in Christ, you know, same thing. The Assembly of God is kind of the white version of, you know, of the Church of God in Christ. Belief systems are wholeheartedly the same.
You mentioned that your book is sort of your attempt in trying to answer some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that you found your answers?
No. And I'm a true believer that as an academic, everything starts with a question. And as Socrates says, you know, understand that you don't know everything. Know thyself, and you don't know everything. And no, I actually think that research project led me to my next book that I'm writing as well. And there's things that I still think about. I walk away with a better understanding, but the research project itself prompted new questions that I still tote them around in my head. And as academics, we always say that you never stop learning. No, I think I'm a little bit better enlightened. I answered some of the questions that I've had, but those prompted other questions that I have. Will that lead me into a new book on that? I don't know. I don't know if I ever write another book on that,
Well, as you were speaking just now, a few things came to mind. One, that, you know, it's 3:30 in the afternoon as we're recording right now. And I must say, I have really learned quite a lot just today.
Thank you.
You know, I've learned a lot just today. But also, when you were talking about, you know, how your, you know, your book, your project is never really finished.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with an artist just a few hours ago, and he kind of said a similar thing about his paintings. You know, he has an exhibit up right now, but he mentioned that, you know, if he takes these back to his studio, then he'll continue working on them. But, you know, so he has to take them home or, you know, put them on a wall in order to kind of to let them be as they are, which is kind of, you know, it's
very,
you know,
similar.
His works of art are never really finished. So
yeah, it's never done. And I think it all, it's all connected in a way that I think at the end, you know, when my career is over, I don't know how many books I'll have on the shelf, but I can tell you that they're all going to talk to one another in a roundabout way, because I think they'll all be birthed. You know, I think the first book kind of birthed that second book, and maybe that second book will birth that third book. And, you know, as we go on around it, just by doing the research of it.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. White.
You're most welcome.
Dr. Calvin White is a history professor and director of African and African American Studies at the University of Arkansas. He is the author of the book, The Rise to Respectability, Race, Religion, and the Church of God in Christ. Dr. White is also the keynote speaker at the Northwest Arkansas Juneteenth celebration this Saturday, June 15th, from 3 to 7 p.m. at Murphy Park in Springdale. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas recently spoke with Dr. White about that celebration. More information about the event is available at nwajuneteenth.org.